Thank you for tuning in to Aster Investment Management's podcast series. A reminder to our listeners that a lot of the economic data and commentary is available on our smartphone app in the iOS and Android App Store. Just search Aster Research and download it today. This week, our Chief Investment Officer, John Eckstein, and Senior Managing Director, Mac O'Brien, discuss the current economic outlook in the era of COVID-19. Thank you both for joining us today.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of Aster's Economic Week in Review. Sibila, thank you for the introduction. As the staple of the podcast, John Eckstein, our CIO, is with us. John, how's it going?
It's going good, Mac. How are you?
Going great. Thank you. I'm surprised you and Robert let me back on the podcast. I listened to it this weekend and it was awesome. I really enjoyed you two going back and forth. So I hope that we can arrange that to happen at least once a month, hopefully on non-farm payroll Fridays, maybe even more frequent.
That would be fun.
Right. So we'd like to start, John, when you and I go back and forth as to what the big picture is looking like. Do you want to just kind of run us through that real quick?
Yeah. So the way I see the big picture now is similar to last few weeks in that we are moving out of the suppression phase. You know, we've been in recovery for several months from the suppression. Then we saw a bit of a pause in the recovery starting from, say, the beginning of June. I guess I'm going to say that I'm seeing a little bit more, a few more maybe signs of life in the last few weeks. So maybe moving from the pause in the recovery into a renewed phase of improved economic statistics relative to the shutdown.
Interesting. So you're thinking more of sustained positive trend growth versus kind of flashes in the pan of good data.
Well, I guess I wouldn't call it flash the pan, right? So I think that data was good. So if we break out the three phases, right, we start sort of the end of March when we get the shutdown, and then the economy falls off a cliff until, you know, the end of April. And then we bounce back at a pretty good pace. We make back maybe half of what we lost in some sense. And then through the beginning of June, the second week of June maybe, and then since then, to the beginning of August, maybe we've got a pause related probably, in my interpretation, to the second southern wave of coronavirus. And, you know, people had opened up too much and then they had to, and then people were staying home again. And so now I see maybe a little bit more growth again, but at a, say, a less sharp level than we saw in the April to June recovery.
So we've been talking over the past several months about, you know, the first order, second order, third order effect. And, you know, I know we have some new listeners that have been subscribing. So the first order is John always uses the restaurant that would be affected by a slowdown of business. The second order would be the linen supplier as an example to the restaurant. And the third order would be a dry cleaner that cleans those linens. So, John, we've been talking about that second and third order not really showing itself. It hasn't manifested because of the Fed stimulus and whatever the case may be. Are you less concerned about the second and third order now that the economic data has been trending positive for the past month or two? Are you less concerned about the second and third order effect actually materializing?
Okay, I think it's actually, unfortunately, it's going to be much more complicated than that. I think we're getting both secondary effects and primary recovery effects at the same time going in different directions. And you can see that in last month's unemployment report, which again was, you know, millions of people lost their jobs. So last month, 3.5 million people went from employed to unemployed. 5 million people went from unemployed to employed. So those are big changes, right? And that's not telling you a simple picture of like, wow, people are getting our jobs back. It's much more complicated than that. And another way, we could talk a little bit about the labor market. And I have a little anecdote to, or actually some data too.
Yeah, we usually like to start the labor market. Let's continue talking about it. And you know, you can start with your anecdote or we can start with initial jobless claims.
Initial claims. So we're going to use the unseasonally adjusted initial claims to talk about 831,000, you know, below a million, right? So that's good. And that's 150,000 better than the previous week. So that is the number of people making initial claims for unemployment benefits. So that's down below a million. The secondary number for that would be, so that's just the state, the regular state program. And then so the pandemic unemployment assistance, which is geared towards gig workers, about 500,000. And that's also lower than, about 150 lower than the previous week. And so together, those numbers are at sort of a local minimum in terms of new claims for unemployment insurance. Mm-hmm. And so those are trending down. They're the best since the spike in March. Now, what's interesting is that California is working with some economists and giving sort of anonymized versions of their entire data files to the economists so that they can process a little bit more detail about them. So that you can basically, you can find out, are people getting double counted? Are they getting rejected and applying again? What's happening? And they say that about 60% of people filing claims the last week in July had been employed and then got unemployed again. So they're reopening cases. And that's typically about 40%, right? So there are definitely people, certainly at the lower end of the employment spectrum, go in and out of employment. But, you know, substantially more people have been doing that since the crisis. And so that could easily be, you know, that's sort of a more complicated story than we want it to be. You know, someone was hired back and then they were laid off again. And that's happening more than is typical.
Mm-hmm. You know, before COVID hit, I'm looking at snapshot of a Bloomberg data. JOLTS came out this week. And before COVID hit, you know, I was talking about how strong the economy was, minus some manufacturing pullback in 2019. And we're talking about the unemployment rate being low but with so many open jobs. And you said, which I always thought was interesting, that there has to be something wrong with that report because you can't have continuously 5, 6, 7 million people looking for jobs. And here we are.
I don't think it makes sense to have
that many open jobs, rather. Yeah.
That many open jobs consistently.
And so that was before all this happened. And now you have an unemployment rate that, depending on if you include pandemic unemployment, call it 15-20%, which I know is a big range, and you still have 6 million open jobs, right? So, or 5.8, whatever it came in this week. So, you know, your comments before all this happened is kind of, you know, ringing true, because there should not be, you should see a reduction in the number of open jobs as everyone should be looking for a job. But I thought,
you know, you're right. Like, I don't understand what's going on with that report in general. And I'm wondering, you know, maybe we could have, there's a couple of pretty friendly experts out there in the world, and maybe one of them could come on and we could talk about, try and understand that a little better as a special episode.
Yeah, that'd be great.
You're right. The job openings are up substantially from a few weeks ago. They're still down about 16% from February levels. Today, they're about 5.5 million. A month ago, they were more like 4.75 million. So a substantial improvement in the number of jobs. So there's still a ways to go. The other thing to think about, though, is that, like I said, there's 5.5 million job openings, but there's about 27 million people receiving unemployment insurance today. We're way swamped. The number of job openings per unemployed person has gone from about 2, like certainly above 1, more than 1 job for every unemployed person, to about a quarter. There's about a quarter of a job for every unemployed person in America right now. So the job openings is number, let's say that's right, but it's still showing many more people who need jobs than have jobs.
John, I remember reading an article a couple of years ago about the JOLTS survey and the jobs that continue to stay open, and like jobs like welders, right? Or electricians, or some type of where you need a very specific trade and training.
Huh.
You can't just fill that with someone who was laid off because they can't work in the mall anymore, right? So there's an element of specialized training that needs to happen. And I think the article is about restructuring the education system in the United States to be able to fill the need of those types of jobs, not just a 4-year degree, but maybe 2-year specialized training degrees, but if that makes any sense.
That makes total sense. That's definitely possible. Like, you just wonder why companies would have that job open. They're like, oh, we need an electrician. They never get the electrician for like 3 years of leaving the job opening. Like, what does that really mean? Do they really need it? Like, I don't know. So I just find that whole situation a little confusing.
Yeah.
So sort of within job postings, there's some higher frequency numbers, and those are showing that something similar, where like job postings are maybe, you know, in the mid-teens below where they were, where you'd expect them to be, where they were last year. And you also see, interestingly, that the bottom third of salary is increasing faster than the top tier salary. And that's probably just because of layoffs were much higher.
Right. All right, John. So I think that pretty much sums up the labor market data for the week, right? In summary, we had positive trend growth within the jobless claims, right? Still a big number, but less than it was last week and the week before. And, you know, we slightly touched upon jolts and job openings. There are jobs, but we don't know where those jobs actually are. And there is a lot more people looking for jobs, obviously, than there are jobs available. Let's take a little bit of a detour from what we usually talk about in the podcast and talk about inflation. We had a couple data points come out this week with the CPI index and the CPI core index. Why don't you walk us through your thoughts there?
So headline CPI year on year is up 1% year on year. CPI ex food and energy is up 1.6%. Both of those were a little above expectations. You can see similarly the PPI numbers, the producer price index, came in a little bit above expectations too. Those numbers are much lower. I don't see a lot of inflation danger. I do think that inflation danger materializing would be challenging for the market, whichever market you're talking about, because we're sort of built into all the bond market, the stock market are sort of infinitely long-lived, very low interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
Something throwing a monkey wrench into that would be challenging for, I think, probably for the stock market and the bond market, because you couple that with the idea that the Fed has said that they're not going to raise rates basically until they see sustained inflation above target, and they're going to let it go above target probably for a little bit. I think they're going to say something about that explicitly.
There was a paper written by the San Francisco Fed, Federal Reserve, about inflation and just the drivers that keep pushing it down, which are just decrease or falling prices within technology and cell phones and all that kind of stuff. How much of it is a tug of war between disinflation because of the world we live in, right, with technology and just global trade?
Secular processes.
And then how much, and then you, on the other hand, you have a third of the GDP just pumped in the system through Fed stimulus. It'll be interesting to see how, I mean, the Fed's not going to move it until it gets above target, and you got forces pulling it down as well as forces pulling it up. It's going to be an interesting game to watch over the next 5 years or so.
It is. And honestly, like, I think that the distance between what economists think they know and what economists really know is the furthest in inflation. Like, there's nobody who would have told you the Bank of Japan wouldn't be able to create inflation if they wanted to. They own, you know, some incredible percentage of the bond market. They buy every bond that comes out. They own a big set percentage of the stock market. They just, you know, buy stuff. And if that was enough to generate inflation, Japan would have plenty. So exactly why inflation expectations have been anchored so low is not clear. And exactly how the Fed could engineer inflation if it wanted to, that also is unclear to me.
So I think that kind of wraps up the data points and comments on inflation. Let's shift over to consumer. Let's look at consumer sentiment.
Yeah, there are a couple of sentiment numbers came out this week. One was small business optimism, which came in a little bit down, a little bit weaker than expected. Bloomberg has a weekly survey where that came in a little bit lower than expected. And our aggregate graph of consumer confidence, where we take a bunch of individual confidence measures and try and extract a common trend from them, has turned a little bit negative too.
Interesting.
So not anywhere near the level of March, April, but also, you know, but below where it was a few weeks ago.
Well, and I think we should note to the listeners that consumer confidence and the consumer has been the backbone of the economic strength that we've seen over the past, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. And then the recovery from the COVID shutdown also was very noticeable in consumer surveys. And this is the first time we've seen, it's not a large deviation from a consumer being more and more confident report after report, but it is a break, right? It is not getting better. It kind of paused and got a little bit worse.
Yeah, it's getting a little worse. It's something we definitely have to keep an eye on.
Okay.
And if we go quickly through a couple of our high frequency indicators, We see some of those definitely still improving. We see hotel occupancy improving steadily. We'll see if that is an artifact of the summer. Like, actually, hotel occupancy usually peaks around last week and then declines. So we'll see what happens in the next few weeks. We see a little bit more activity in the open table seated diners. We see maybe a little pickup in TSA, so people flying. And then if we look at some of our other weekly indicators, they're telling sort of the more industrial indicators, like year-on-year change in steel or boxcars, number of boxcars. Those are still down and not showing as sharp a recovery as we've seen in the labor market, which has recovered, say, 50% of its damage. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm seeing in the high-frequency stuff. Maybe a little bit more improvement the last week or 2 weeks, and we're going to have to see if that continues or it was sort of a flash in the pan.
Yeah, kind of anecdotal story. I was with an industry colleague, industry being financial services, financial sales. I'll keep the name of the firm off the record. And we were just talking about what we were going to do. And, you know, I run the distribution for Aster. And this person was, higher up on the management and sales side of his firm. And he was saying that their approach right now is just to try to spend as much money and get in front of as many people as possible. They're allowed to cross state lines and do marketing sales meetings, where the other person with me, in order to grab a coffee with someone in their neighborhood, they have to have approval from the head of the firm. And these are big, you know, global asset management firms. Aster's policy is that, you know, our salespeople can abide by their local state rules and go on meetings if they're comfortable with it. So, you know, you do see people that are starting to get out and say, you know what, we're not going to wait for a vaccine. We're going to start trying to grow our business and capture market share. And then, of course, on the other side, you have firms that are being super cautious, and then they're still not greenlighting any type of marketing or travel and expense budgets.
Interesting. And it'll be interesting also to see what happens in the school reopening as that spreads through the rest of the country. And, you know, the other thing about the southern wave, you know, has been much less deadly than the first wave in the Northeast. And so is that going to affect, I mean, it's been deadly enough, right? We're having 1,000 people a day dying, and that's probably going on for a while. But that southern wave is abating, as far as we can tell. There's a little bit of data problems in some of the states, but will that spike up again with schools reopening? And if schools close sort of widespread, sustained school closures, that's going to be hard on people, right? A lot of us have gotten by like saying, okay, we just have to hold out until September and then the kids are back at school. So you said that your kids are not going back to school. Like, how's your
not our choice. Yeah, our district decided that we are going to be 100% remote going back. And I mean, it's tough. It's very tough. You know, we ordered some desks and we're clearing out a playroom. It's going to be the school room. And, you know, fortunately, we're, you know, able to do that. And I've talked about it on the podcast before, but the inequality gap in the United States for people that have single parent households are, my wife works, but she works on her own schedule. She's a photographer, so she can bear the brunt of the work that it's going to take to teach a kindergartner how to read and a fourth grader, you know, how to do long division. Whereas I just don't think there's the large portion of the United States that parents can put that time into it.
I think you're right. And it is interesting, it's not surprising, but you know, how gendered the disruption is. You know, many more women losing their jobs than men, and I think a lot of women are taking most of the burden of educating the kids at home. You know, one of the big highlights of, you know, my whole career has been this steadily increasing share of female labor participation. And that's going to, like, we're going to come out of COVID with that being substantially disrupted in a very gendered way.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, we have our offices, you know, I'm in Chicago, you're in New York office, but you know, you couple that with the unrest in the riots in the streets in Chicago, with the schools not going back. I mean, our office won't open full time for the foreseeable future, right? And that just decimates the businesses down there. And, yep. You know, the metro's not going to be running and no one's buying gas. I mean, this economy opening back up, or the forecast of it opening back up quickly, I mean, we could easily be looking at Q2 of 2021 before there's any type of normalcy.
Yeah, and to the extent that there are permanent shifts in behavior, you know, that could be extremely challenging to deal with. You know, if you think about like one of the stories people are telling about the U.S. in the last 10 or 15 or 20 years is, you know, offshoring of manufacturing. So there's fewer jobs for people without college degrees, fewer high-paying jobs, people without college degrees. If you've been a steel worker, like you can't go be a coder, right? And so there's real disruptions. And so, you know, is there going to be similar disruptions if, gosh, you know, we don't need the density of businesses in downtowns that we used to have? What do those people do? Like, do they probably don't need that many out in the suburbs? You don't need that many restaurants in the suburbs either. So they have to go, you know, become massage therapists or something like that. And that is very challenging to do at scale.
Yeah. And we talked about that early on in podcasts when COVID wasn't the subject of every single week, where just the, I think it was, we called the retraining of the United States workforce to adapt to the slow change in what we were seeing, where the jobs are going and the outsourcing. And COVID just kind of sped that up by a multiple. We didn't have time to spare to begin with in terms of the U.S. worker. Like, as we see every single week, just kind of have to wait and see, right?
Yep, yep.
John, what are we looking at for next week?
Good question, Mac. So next week we've got retail sales. We've got a couple of confidence numbers coming out. You know, I like to look at those. We do have a bunch of housing market indicators coming out next week. And then, of course, claims number, the all-important claims number on Thursday.
And what those retail numbers are for the month of June?
Those are July,
rather?
Those are July numbers, yeah. So these are advanced. These are advanced numbers.
These so we advanced. Won't see an impact of the $600 being taken away until the retail numbers in September.
The number that's released in September for August. Yeah.
Right. Got
it. And so, you know, you can actually track how much money the Treasury's putting out, and, you know, it definitely dropped a lot. So I think there's a big question of if you were on unemployment, like your check went down last week, right?
And significantly, yeah.
Yep. For some people, you know, by three quarters. Your check went down last week, and so then you've got a decision, right? Are they going to get it together and get it back or not? And then I would think, like, every week that goes by, you've got to be like, well, you know, I can't hope that they're going to get together and make it retroactive anymore. I'm going to have to cut spending. So I think a week or two, people will be able to float, and then it gets harder every passing week.
Yeah, I got that retail number for September for the August numbers marked on my calendar because I've kind of been preaching it all along. I mean, that article I read that had outside of major metropolitan areas, people on unemployment were earning two times their normal wages. And these are people who don't have a high savings rate. So that money was being pumped into the system exactly as it was intended to be by the Federal Reserve. And if you take that away, I think you'd see retail figures drop dramatically, in my opinion. But, you know,
I think that's definitely possible. I think it's definitely possible. I think, you know, I don't know exactly when that will filter into the economy.
Yeah, true. Could be the following month. All right. Well, another interesting week next week. John, as always, thank you for your time. I want to give a lot of credit out to Sibila. Sibila takes all this nonsense. You get the final product here, the listener, but Sibila puts a lot of time into editing John and I's back and forth and quabbling and whatnot. So thank you, Sibila. John, thank you. Everyone have a great weekend, and we will talk to you next week.
Thanks, Matt. Talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
To learn more about Aster Investment Management's research and strategies, please visit us on the web at www.asterim.com or stay up to date by following us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and our app is also available on the App Store and Google Play. Thank you. Aster Investment Management, LLC, is a SEC-registered investment advisor. All information contained herein is for informational purposes only. This is not a solicitation to offer investment advice or services in any state where to do so would be unlawful. Analysis and research are provided for informational purposes only, not for trading or investing purposes. All opinions expressed are as of the date of publication and subject to change. They are not intended as investment recommendations.